This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we're talking about powdered sugar.
Yeah, this episode was suggested by a Reddit user. Is that what we call Reddit people?
Yeah, we call them users.
We call them users. Wow. Okay, well, this was suggested by Seaside Houses on Reddit.
That sounds
such a
nice,
lovely
doesn't
name.
It?
You know, when I was typing it into the agenda, I initially typed it as Seaside Tables, which I also thought was really nice. I mean,
I thought you were going to say Seaside Horses.
I would love a seaside table. I mean, if I can't have a seaside house, maybe I could have a seaside table.
Just like a table kind of like sitting out near the water somewhere?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Is that what they mean by the water table?
That's exactly what they mean by the water table.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I hear Seaside Houses, I think Murder, She Wrote, like the opening credits of Murder, She Wrote.
I've never seen the opening credits of Murder, She Wrote.
I don't think I have in like 30 years.
Okay. All right. Well, Matthew, today we are talking about powdered sugar. And I am really glad we're doing this episode because I think powdered sugar is one of those ingredients that most of us probably have in our houses, but maybe like never really think about.
Maybe we take it for granted.
And also, some of my favorite like sweets involve powdered sugar. So I'm glad we're getting around to this. Getting around to this finally.
Yeah, we get around.
We do get around.
I have a little anecdote from work that I wanted to share, a food-related anecdote before we start. This could be
a
new segment. Like
food-related anecdote before we start.
Yeah, frab was just, I would just like frabs. Like how apparently we call our listeners milkmaids or the clomp. People are still sending in ideas, and they know that we've settled on milkmaids or the clomp, but I'm glad we'll still take them. Okay, my team at work is going on a retreat that will have happened by the time you hear this, maybe to Lake Tahoe, which is a lake in California. I've never been there, so I had to look up whether it was in Nevada or California. I just this morning got a survey asking, some food choices. Like, do you have any like food allergies or like preferences? And like, you know, would you prefer this kind of sandwich or this kind of sandwich for lunch? And then there was like a free form, like, what would you like to have on hand for non-perishable snacks? And I'm thinking, okay, I've got ideas here. And then I looked closer and it said, for example, peanut M&Ms, Cheez-Its, ... And I was like, that is literally the two things I was going to say. What is happening?
Did like, you feel this, really like understood by your workplace? Did you feel seen and valued?
Understood, but maybe also they like are using my laptop camera to spy on my snacking habits.
Yeah,
because this wasn't sent just to me. And those are literally the top two things I would have chosen.
But hold on. You had a retreat. Your workplace had a retreat in Palm Springs. And there was also, you know, presumably like a snack situation there. Did you fill out a questionnaire then and ask for peanut M&Ms and Cheez-Its?
I don't remember. There were definitely peanut M&Ms. I don't remember if there were Cheez-Its. There were pretzels. It was a good snack table. That's but great. Like, yeah, this like seeing that, like, you know, and here, Matthew, is the contents of your snack brain was
so was
puzzling and yes, uplifting as well.
Yeah, you're clearly you found your people.
Now, what if I get to the retreat and neither of those things are available? What does that mean?
I don't even want to contemplate a world in which
that would
happen.
What if everyone else on my team fills it out like, fuck those two ideas. Like, we want a beef jerky and bananas.
Yum. If there is
which
one,
would also
be
fine.
It, like, you know how the general fruit offerings at
the GFOs,
like kind
yeah.
of a crappy like hotel buffet or whatever, it's going to be a bowl full of bananas that are either underripe or overripe.
Yep. Usually
it's gonna be a
under,
bowl
I feel like.
Full of red delicious apples.
Yep. That. Yep. I knew what you were going to say next.
A whole bunch of oranges.
Yeah.
Just like ordinary navel oranges.
Yeah. We're not talking clementines.
There's nothing less appealing to me than that trifecta of ordinary fruits.
Wife of the show, Lori, and I just stayed at a hotel that had a motel that had like a better than average continental breakfast. It had the kind of like packaged breakfast pastries that we sat on that one episode. Yeah. But but it had like Yoplait, individual Yoplait yogurts. And I feel like there was something else I pulled from there. And like, oh, they had the kind of green tea that I like the Costco Japanese green tea, which is pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah, I was pleased. Like, I don't have a comment on the fruit situation. I kind of didn't notice.
I'm really happy for you.
Yeah. Okay, so this has been our most beloved segment, Frab. What was it? Free-form rambling anecdotes.
Food-related anecdote before we start.
Frab WS sounds like an old-timey corporation. Right?
It does.
We're in the import export business.
Did I tell you or did I send you? There's a company called Flat D. Like,
flat, oh God.
And then initial D. And do you want to guess at what they sell? You're never
what
gonna guess.
What does Flat D sell? It's, I mean, I know this is like the almost obvious joke, but it sounds like they come to your house and take away your Viagra. Flat D.
I don't even know how Ash and I came upon this. It's a real company, Matthew, and what they sell is like fart protectant clothing and pads you can put in your underwear, like odor absorbing.
Wow.
They sell a fart sack. It looks like a sleeping bag, but you put yourself in it if you're feeling too flatulent. But this, the company is called Flat D. Look it up.
I get it. Okay, so like flatulence defender.
Something like that.
I want to laugh at this, and yet I think probably for some people this is like a real problem that they're really happy to have a solution for.
But I mean, like, so I made some like doctored black beans the other day, like canned black sure. beans, and it's been real rough around my house ever since.
you know, doctored them with more beans.
Something I've been thinking about is I feel like I eat a lot of fiber, and uh-huh. yet this kind of thing can absolutely destroy the quality of life in our household for multiple days.
But you have an air filter. Isn't it magical?
Is there something where, like, you know, am I, like, not eating enough beans? And so when I do, like, everything goes haywire, like, in terms of the air quality in here?
I genuinely don't know the answer. Like, I think that's possible, like, because I imagine it's less of an issue among people who eat beans like literally every day.
I feel like I eat maybe at least as many beans as like the average white American person.
Yeah.
But I.
So maybe four beans a week.
Four beans a week. Anyway.
You ever eat magic beans?
I can't imagine somebody needing Flat D more than I do.
I don't know.
Like, I think we came upon it because Ash was seriously like, I'm going to put you in a bag before
so
you
did
get
you,
in our
did
bed.
Did you order some?
No.
Oh, I think you should. I think you should and you report back.
Matthew, all of our extra money goes to baby formula and child care.
I understand. So you're saying this isn't an essential need? It sounds like it is.
Okay,
cool. So we have no listeners left at this point. So let's talk about powdered sugar.
Okay. All right. So, hey, I want to start off on memory lane today. So the first thing that I thought of was this like hand cranked, like tin sifter that my mom had. And I think that it was painted white with some sort of like a floral motif on the outside of it. Right? Does this sound familiar?
It does.
And I remember always being thrilled when we got to pull it out and use it when we were baking. You wrote down that your mother also had one of these.
Yes, my mom also had a sifter. So I think there are two kinds of sifters. Like there's the crank kind and there's the kind you kind of shake side to side. You know what I mean? And like something moves inside.
Oh, the kind you shake side to side, I think of as just like a sieve that you put the powdered sugar in.
I think there's a kind that you like jostle and it's got like two screens that like move like parallel to each other. You can't even see my hand motion here.
I would like our listeners to write in with a drawing of what they think Matthew is.
I think this is real. Okay, shake sifter. I'm just Googling. Whoa. Okay.
Did your mom have the crank kind or the shake kind?
I don't remember, but I remember shaking a sifter at some point, so it could have been that. But as I recall, I think I wrote down that I ruined it by putting sand in it, but now I remember, I think I actually put sawdust in it. Like, why? Just because like kids do stupid stuff all day long.
Okay, my mom, you know, it's interesting because like nobody has these anymore.
That's what I was going to say. Like we both immediately thought of it as like formative childhood memories, and yet we haven't been able to give our children the same hazy sifter memories.
My mom's also, you know, we did an episode on cooking sounds, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that if I were to talk about baking sounds,
oh yeah,
the sound of the part that you crank, scraping against the mesh sieve in the sifter
was.
I can still hear it. And then also the sound of the tin hitting my mother's hand as she tapped the side of it to get the last bits of sugar down into the well of the sieve.
Okay, let me ask you a question that is now like we're veering off the subject of powdered sugar, which we've stuck so scrupulously to the subject up until now. Is like sifting flour a thing you ever have to do anymore?
I never sift flour.
I never do either.
Literally, I'm wondering,
is there like some recipe where it's necessary, or is flour just like better like prepped before it comes to you? I know it says pre-sifted often.
Yeah,
on the
I wonder if it's all just mostly.
Maybe it was always a scam to sell hand cranked sifters.
I think that it was sort of like, you know, the U.S. not having universal childcare. It was just something to keep women busy.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Basically, it was like sift everything, ladies.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Don't use your brain.
The sugar, the flour, the sawdust, the holy trinity of middle America cooking.
Yep. Okay, so yeah, my mom's sifter. I miss that thing. And I remember my mom in particular using the powdered sugar on Christmas cookies.
Yes.
So Russian tea cakes, which I know we're going to talk about a little later, also often called Mexican wedding cookies, etc. Linzer cookies. You know, the top of her Linzer cookie was like a circle with a hole. It was like donut shaped, basically.
Did she ever use the sifter to give the Christmas tree like a light dusting of snow?
Anyway, you are so pleased with your stupid joke. Oh, you're making your jostling shifter hands.
Jostling shifter hands. No, I need my shifter hands when I drive my souped up Nissan Initial D style and D style.
That's your old Datsun.
That's right.
Flat D. As when you have a lowrider Datsun. Okay, Matthew, what about your memory lane?
That was kind of it. Like mostly the sifting. Like I think I did like you know those powdered sugar donuts that you got at the supermarket at one point. Like I don't even particularly like those now, although I certainly will eat them if they're available. But like there was a time when I was a kid that was like an extremely sought after item.
Oh my God, Matthew, I absolutely have the same sort of emotional, like there's the same like emotional sparkle around donut gems.
It's kind of like all the Hostess products. I feel like when you're a kid, or at least when you were a kid in the 80s, like maybe your friends' parents let them have, like, you know, like Lucky Charms, but like even in like the Lucky Charms house, like Twinkies and donuts and shit were always like, you know, a special occasion. Like we talked our parents into this kind of item, right?
Yes. But yeah, the donut gem, the powdered sugar donut gem, was the, I mean, I remember feeling that there was, for me as a child, like the original perfectly engineered food product. Like,
yeah,
it was
kind of
so
like the way it crumbles in your mouth.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'd feel that way about it now. I know that we did a Hostess products mm-hmm. episode a long time ago, and I think we felt less than, you know,
yeah, honestly, like, I didn't even like the Hostess stuff that much when I was a kid. I'm sure I said this on the Hostess products episode. Like, but I think probably the donut gems would have been my favorite.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Matthew, that I'm really glad we've established
Me
that
too.
Because we are starting out really on the same memory lane. There's so much overlap on our memory lanes. Let's link arms.
We should follow this yellow brick road. Mm-hmm. And see where it leads.
So is powdered sugar the same thing as confectioner's sugar? Because I was told at some point in my formative baking years that they were not.
They are totally the same thing.
What?
And they're also, it's also called icing sugar in England and sucre glace in France.
Okay.
And probably some other cool things in other places. But yes, confectioner's sugar and powdered sugar are the same thing.
So I could swear that like one of them had something added to it that it would sometimes give it an aftertaste and the other didn't, or.
That is such a beautiful segue, because let's talk about what this stuff is.
Oh, okay.
All right. It's sucrose, which is also what granulated sugar is, that's been finely milled and mixed with an anti-caking agent, usually cornstarch or sometimes potato starch.
What do you think the ratio is?
Oh, I know this. It's between 97 to 3 and 95 to 5.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Typically about 5% starch.
That's actually a pretty high amount when you really think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Enough so, let's just jump ahead that powdered sugar dissolves really well, and so you might think it would be like good to like stir into your iced tea, but A, it'll clump. But also, like, even if it doesn't, if you like put the powdered sugar in first, it has enough starch in it that it will thicken your drink.
Ooh, really?
Which means you can use it to make like a homemade hot cocoa mix, which you want to be a little thick. But like for like a beverage that you don't want to have viscosity, probably not the best choice.
Okay. Oh, this is so interesting. Okay. Wow. Okay. So why do we need the anti-caking agent?
Because sugar is hygroscopic. I'm sure we've used this word on the show before, right?
Why isn't it hydroscopic?
Oh, I was afraid you were going to ask that. And because I realized as I was pulling out this agenda that I don't know the answer. It seems like it should be hydroscopic.
Yeah.
But a hygrometer measures humidity and a hydrometer measures something else.
Okay.
Right. We have to answer hygro versus hydro. Which one is better? Okay. Hydro is the prefix meaning water. Hygro is the prefix meaning wet or moist, may or may not be from water. But in this case, it is. So,
okay. Well, so I guess what we're saying here is powder sugar is attracted to moisture, or sugar attracts moisture. It doesn't have to be water. It could be anything.
Okay. I have to report one other important thing for the internet. I still have not determined what the difference between hydro and hygro is, but I'm looking at, like, you know, the Google clip from a Reddit link where the question is, what's the difference between hydro and hygro? And the summary of the page is, what would be the most unexpected opponent for Godzilla in the movie Godzilla Versus? What do you think? Godzilla versus hydro or hygro?
Hygro. Hygro definitely sounds more aggro.
Yes, it sounds more aggro. Yes, mm-hmm. It's highly aggro. That's what hygro means.
You know, when I was a kid and a teenager, and I would say even someone in college, it
all
never,
at the same time.
Like, I never regretted that, like, I never took Latin or Greek or anything like that. And now I really, now I wish, like, that knowledge were in my brain the way that some other foundational knowledge.
I knew some people who took like Greek and Latin like for science. So you learn like just enough to know what all the prefixes and suffixes mean.
Yeah.
And I didn't take that, so I don't know.
All right. Well, here we go.
Okay.
So yes, sugar is hygroscopic.
Yeah. It absorbs moisture from the air. And the extent to which it can grab onto moisture depends on how much of its surface area is exposed. So if you got like granulated sugar, that's like little hunks of sugar. So relatively little surface area is exposed. And it's so it like reaches an equilibrium where it's like drying out kind of as quickly as it's absorbing water.
Okay.
But if you have powdered sugar, then tons of surface area is exposed. And if you leave it out, it will, or, you know, even if it's in a bag, unless it is like scrupulously airtight, it will absorb enough water to start clumping, which is probably not what you want, unless you put in some starch that can absorb that.
Well, and even with starch, it's always wise to sift your powdered sugar because inevitably it has clumps in it.
Right.
So when we buy powdered sugar, is there like a standard size of grain?
Yeah, like small is the standard size.
Okay.
Okay, so as far as I could tell, so technically powdered sugar is graded by fineness for either triple X, quadruple X, or 10X. But when I looked at it, like, you know, Domino brand powdered sugar says like 10X confectioner's sugar on it. And I think probably all of what we get is like either it's 10X or like someone made this up and it's not a real thing.
Is it the more X's, the finer it is?
The more X's, the finer it is, and the dirtier.
Yeah, for sure.
The sexier.
For sure. You know, I wonder, so 10X just reminds me of Fast 10 or Fast X.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So how long has this stuff been around? I mean, it must have taken, it is very fine. I've never looked closely to see how much finer it is than like all-purpose flour.
But oh, it that's seems a good
like
question.
Pretty sophisticated milling technology to be able to do this.
Yeah. Okay. Size of sugar grain. Oh no. I got to stop Googling things during the show. Let's just wing it. So according to an article I read on mashed.com, powdered sugar originated in the 17th or 18th century. But at the time, it was like a byproduct of granulated sugar production. So they were like milling granulated sugar, and it was coming out in like all different sizes. And so they would sieve it, and like, you know, some of it would be kind of like chunky, some would be medium chunky, and some would be the smallest size, the powdered sugar.
You know, I think that it seems like it powdered sugar is to granulated sugar production.
Yeah.
As sawdust is to milling of wood.
Yeah.
There you go.
You brought it back around to sawdust.
Thank you.
Okay. So mom, if you're listening, I was, because of what Molly just said, I was right to put sawdust in your sifter. Yeah. Okay. You can stop holding a grudge now.
So Matthew, what do we use this for? Like, what is it good for?
Okay,
so I mean, I know, but do you know?
Yeah, it's sort of. The first thing that came to mind was glaze, right?
Yeah, glazes.
Glazes, and I'm not a big glaze fan. I know some of you out there are total glaze heads.
I'm a glaze head.
I respect that completely. Like, I would rather have, like, you know, anywhere I find a glaze, I kind of want like a ganache or a cream cheese frosting or something, but making glaze is super fun because it takes so little liquid to dissolve so much powdered sugar, and it fascinates me every time. Have you done this recently?
Not super recently, but I've made a lot of glaze in my day. Mm-hmm. I love glaze. I especially love a really nice tart lemon glaze. So that would be fresh lemon juice added to powdered
sugar.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, if I had to pick a glaze, I don't hate glaze, but yeah, I want it to, I don't like plain glaze, like made with water, but like, mm-hmm. Like a lemon glaze or a coffee glaze is my other favorite.
Ooh.
Ever done that?
I wonder how the glaze on a glazed donut is made.
You know, I just said I don't like plain glaze, but obviously the glazed pain de ring is my favorite donut. So what am I talking
about?
Well,
I feel like a glazed donut, that's a different thing than like a glaze that's on a cake.
Yeah, I was imagining like a glaze drizzled on a scone or something where it's kind of thick.
Oh, I don't like
that.
But I like it on a, I like it on cake. I don't want it on a scone though.
Yeah.
But I think that's my own personal
scone. I love the
look
of glaze on a cake. We've talked about my problematic feelings about cake enough. So.
Okay. Aside from making glazes, what do you do with powdered sugar?
Okay. There's really one other thing that I do. And when you say other than glazes, like when was the last time I really made a glaze? Like probably back in my sawdust sifting days.
Okay.
Muddy Buddies, a.k.a. Puppy Chow.
I don't think I've ever had Puppy Chow.
Oh, okay. Do you know what it is?
It involves peanut butter and cereal and powdered sugar.
And chocolate chips. So
How does this work?
You take some Chex cereal.
Okay.
And you set it aside because that's not in the first step. You melt together some butter, chocolate chips, and peanut butter and make like a gloop out of that.
Okay.
A real good gloop.
And this is the mud.
This is the mud. Then you toss that with a bunch of Chex cereal, whatever variety you like, but probably not a sweetened one. I think that would be gross, but like wheat Chex, corn Chex, rice Chex, whatever, or Crispix. And you toss that until the gloop is coating the cereal pretty well. And then you put in powdered sugar and you shake it in a bag so that it gets really well coated and they stop sticking together.
So wait, it must be so much powder, because as you may recall, powdered sugar is hygroscopic.
Oh, yeah,
And so you've just put powdered sugar onto this like gloopy cereal?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Do you have to put a ton of powdered sugar on it?
Yes, it is. I have overdone it. It is possible to overdo it and then like all you taste is the powdered sugar. But yes, no matter what, it requires a lot. And you want to be able to eat these things like, you know, you will need to wash your hands, but you don't want your hand to turn into a crime scene of like, you know, splattered chocolate and peanut butter and stuff. So you need to get a good coating on there.
So should you be able to like reach in to a bag of Puppy Chow and extract like one single piece of cereal?
Yeah, that generally, yes. There will be like a couple stuck together here and there, but mostly, you know, you shake them until they separate.
I would love to do an episode about like sweets made from cereal.
That's a good idea.
Could we do that? I mean, there's got to be other things other than just Rice Krispie Treats and Puppy Chow.
I had a Rice Krispie Treat this morning. Yeah, there definitely are.
Okay, great. Abby, flag it.
Flag it, bag it, and shake it with powdered sugar.
Okay, Muddy Buddies. Okay.
Yeah, well, we always call them Muddy Buddies rather than Puppy Chow, but it's the same thing.
Okay. You know, I do want to talk about cake.
Yeah,
for
please.
A minute, Matthew. I want to talk about, the book Snacking Cakes, which
yes.
I know we both love. Snacking Cakes has a recipe in it for a powdered donut cake. And it's just a really good white cake. I think it has some nutmeg in it. I think it's got sour cream in it. I mean, it's basically replicating a powdered sugar cake donut.
Yeah.
And I love it. Like, this cake has my name all over it.
And you like wrote your name in powdered sugar?
I wrote my name all over it. That's right.
Did you? You could do that. You could like, you know, cut out like block letters and like put it on the cake and then powder it and then take them off. That'd be pretty cool.
I've always wanted to do that. I've never actually done that.
I don't think I have either.
Huh. Wow. Missed opportunities.
Yeah, but it's not too late. So just before we started recording this episode, wife of the show, Lori, came over to me with the book Snacking Cakes open to that page and said, don't forget to talk about this. And I don't think I've ever had it with powdered sugar because Lori always makes it with cinnamon sugar because we're big cinnamon sugar fans. But I want to try the powdered sugar version.
Oh, God, I don't think I ever even considered doing it with cinnamon sugar, but that sounds great, too.
Yeah, right.
Okay, what about other cakes? Are there cakes that you've made that get powdered sugar dusted on top, where that's like an integral thing, not just sort of a garnish?
You say that as if I've ever made a cake, which I don't. I have made a cake once or twice. One time I made like a cake with like a frosting, I made a crepe cake with a frosting made with freeze-dried fruit. Like whizzed into the frosting.
Okay. What about, hold on, moving right along. You know, I hadn't thought of this until now and it's so obvious, but hey, what about lemon bars?
Yes. I love lemon bars. I have made lemon bars. I'm sure I've dusted them with powdered sugar. I like the look of it. I don't honestly find it necessary. I think I prefer a lemon bar like with just like the gel, like, you know, translucent lemon topping that I can see.
I do think I want powdered sugar, but you have to really like reapply it frequently, right?
Oh yeah, it's like sunscreen. Like I like every hour at the most, but like preferably every 30 minutes.
Every 80 minutes if you've been swimming.
Right, exactly. Like if you take those lemon bars in the water, like you need to reapply right away.
that delights me. Okay, Matthew, what else?
Okay, so I learned, and I think like if you had pressed me, probably I did know this, but there's a type of powdered sugar called snow sugar, which contains anti-binding agents so that it doesn't melt, quote, even when dusted onto baked goods that are slightly wet, like fruit bars and tarts, according to Wikipedia.
I bet like big commercial bakeries that make lemon bars and stuff. I bet this is how they do it.
Oh, 100%. Have you ever heard fruit bars and tarts described as slightly wet before? Isn't that appetizing?
Okay.
Okay, so I already said the thing about like you can make it into a hot cocoa mix. I learned that generally if you are making a recipe that has a lot of fat in it, it's okay to substitute powdered sugar for granulated at a 1 3/4 powdered sugar to 1 cup granulated sugar by volume ratio. Is this really ever going to come up where you have
why would you ever have powdered sugar but not on hand granulated but not sugar? Granulated?
I guess you ran out and your kid didn't put it on the shopping list after your kid ate all the granulated sugar just in handfuls. You're a bad parent.
This is interesting. Why do you think the recipe needs to have a lot of fat in order for this to work?
I think because the fat is going to like neutralize the like gelatinizing effect of the starch by like coating the starch molecules. That is my guess. And otherwise, like if you put a bunch of cornstarch into a recipe, like it's going to change the texture a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But again, like has this ever come up for you where you had to substitute powdered sugar for granulated? Like maybe you were
we want to know
in the wilderness.
Matthew, let's talk about cookies.
Please.
You know, we started out with my memory lane where there were Linzer cookies and Russian tea cakes. Anything you want to add?
I'm sure we've talked about that cookie. Maybe we had this whole discussion on the holiday cookies episode, or like one of the like 4 holiday cookie episodes we've done. that like really like the origin of the name and the cookie itself of Russian tea cakes, Mexican wedding cookies, snowballs, polvorones. Nobody knows for sure where these came from or like where the various names come from. It is an American cookie. It might be related to a Spanish cookie. That's maybe the leading theory, but it's just one of those things. But everyone likes those, right?
Everyone does like those. Yeah. Have you ever seen like a crinkly, like a chocolate cookie that gets rolled in powdered sugar?
Yes.
Or gets rolled in something and then when it bakes, it cracks.
I love those. I'm so glad you brought those up.
What is it called?
Chocolate crinkle cookies.
Chocolate crinkle cookies. There we go.
One of my favorite desserts involving powdered sugar. Yeah, I will eat those all day long.
Great.
Kind of a brownie-like texture.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Wow. Okay, well, this is making me remember uses for powdered sugar that I hadn't thought of in a very long time.
Okay, one more. This is a thing I have never had, certainly never made, and just learned about it when researching for this episode. Have you ever heard of a St. Louis gooey butter cake?
No.
Me neither. So it's like a yeasted coffee cake that is topped with a gooey, buttery layer made with tons of butter and powdered sugar, or in some recipes, granulated sugar, but then definitely like topped with a generous sift of powdered sugar. And it looks really good. And you can find lots of like people who grew up in St. Louis telling gross stories about how when they were growing up, they would like shave off the top layer and just like stuff that into their face and leave the bready part behind.
I can't wait to look this up.
I really want to try this. Yeah, because like in the cross section, you can see like it's got a layer of bread topped with a thick, equally thick layer of goo. I bet it's great.
Okay, excellent. I love goo.
Yeah, me too.
This has been delightful. I feel that I've done a lot of learning in this episode.
Yeah, like I feel like my heart went a little gooey.
I feel like my heart grew a couple sizes.
Yeah.
With love for powdered sugar.
I feel like we probably saved Christmas. we stole it first and then we saved it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And I'm going to go take off the antler that I've strapped to Gilbert's head.
Okay. Probably a good idea.
Yeah. He's probably already eaten it, actually. Okay. I mean, yeah, his own head, not the antler.
That guy will eat anything.
The guy will
literally
eat anything.
He ate Cindy Lou Who.
Today, I've already pulled one rock out of his mouth.
Sure, of course. Mm-hmm. But okay. But what about, isn't that like good for his gizzard?
Is it chickens that he eats?
Yeah.
Rocks? Okay.
I think so.
All right. Matthew, you know what? We have some spilled mail today.
We sure do. I don't know if we have an answer to this question, but I love the question so much, I'm going to read it.
Okay.
This is from listener Colton, who asks, I am curious about how you store or hide appliances. You could pick any one of these as a single listener question or possibly make a whole episode about it.
About it. Yes.
Okay.
Listener Colton, listener Colton really gets us.
If the latter, I would also include a question about where you remember your parents hiding appliances.
Well, my mom would always hide my Easter basket.
Sure, that's an appliance.
With it was always 100%
thought you were going to say vibrator. What hiding place have you felt particularly pleased or clever about? What is the craziest place you have ever seen someone else hide an appliance when you were visiting their house or a vacation rental? Do you
hide your toaster when you're not using it?
Thank you.
Are there appliances you hide so well that you forget to ever use them?
Do you? Okay, then the next question is, do you like microwaves installed over the oven? How do you feel about hotels hiding their refrigerators? Or similarly, how about those fancy-ass custom refrigerators that look wood-paneled or otherwise like a normal wall? And that's from listener Colton. This may be the greatest question we've ever received. I have nothing to say except what planet are you from?
I cannot wait to get into this. Here we go.
Okay. Where do you hide your appliances, Molly? I couldn't believe it. I came to your house recently to see your baby,
couldn't
and there were visible appliances in your kitchen. I was so ashamed for you. Okay. Yeah, I saw your toaster.
I know. It's only because we're such good friends, Matthew. No, here's the deal. I have two toasters. I have a slot toaster and a toaster oven. They cannot, there's nowhere in my kitchen to hide them.
If there was.
Oh, I put them under the bed. No, you wonder how I stay so toasty at night.
That's a good point.
No. Okay. My toasters are visible. because they are on the bottom shelf of like restaurant, like stainless prep tables that we have as part of our countertop. My oven, completely visible. In fact, you can't miss it.
Yeah.
My fridge, you absolutely cannot miss it. It is a white box that sits.
That's weird.
In the corner of my kitchen.
You should like nail some wood panels to it.
The dishwasher, it has a like stainless steel front. Also, can't miss it.
No, it's no longer the quiet partner.
It's not the quiet partner. Let's see. Things like my KitchenAid mixer, that is also visible.
Mm-hmm.
Instant Pot, also visible.
Yeah, I just put all these things on shelves in the living room or dining room.
Yeah, these things are all on open shelving. I mean, my kitchen is very cobbled together, and I would say yours is too.
Oh, yeah.
Really? You've got additional shelving you've put in. Neither one of us has a kitchen that we have like renovated in any meaningful way. Everything is visible. Nothing is hidden.
I feel like
that's...
I mean, this is like a more serious answer than I was expecting for this question. But I feel like the idea of hiding appliances is like something for like a kitchen in a magazine that never actually gets used, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have been in a lot of Airbnbs where they don't leave the toaster out on the counter. Even the one that we were in for our corporate retreat recently tucked the toaster away in a cabinet. And I don't ever understand that because literally the toaster gets used at least once every single day at my house.
Yeah.
So I don't know why I wouldn't leave it out. I think also I don't like clutter, but I like my house to look really lived in.
Yeah, no, so, I totally get that.
So I've got stuff out. The other thing is, I mean, truthfully, I really think it takes a certain amount of money to start hiding your appliances.
Yeah.
And I don't know if people have noticed, but podcasts, at least independent comedy podcasts, are not how you make that kind of money.
Yeah, that's right. Our IPO is still pending.
Right.
The SEC said if you're expecting a market cap of less than $100, you should maybe like wait on the IPO.
You know, that said, listener Colton, I do want to say a couple things. My parents renovated a house they bought when I was like a preteen. It was sort of their dream house. And they did shell out for a fridge with like beautiful, mm-hmm. like wooden, it was basically encased in the same thing as their cabinets.
I love that. I think that's great.
It was really classy. My ex-husband, Brandon, has just finished basically rehabilitating an old farmhouse. And he and his partner, Natalie, have also done the same thing with their fridge. It looks, you know, it blends right in with the cabinets. And it looks lovely. It looks lovely. I don't know. I like a fridge that's covered with magnets and stuff.
Yeah, I do that. We talked about how like newer fridges like are often not magnetic anymore.
Yeah, I think that's a bummer.
My in-laws just got a new fridge. Like they did a kitchen renovation that's really nice and they got a new fridge. I think it is magnetic. I was concerned about that because their old fridge had a lot of magnets. Not all of them made it over to the new fridge, but some of them did.
Mm. Another cool thing that my parents hid was the trash. So
that's a good point.
Well, so trash cans, like people are of many different minds about this, right? You could have a trash can that like stands in the corner and it looks like a trash can.
Yeah.
You could have a trash can that's like under the sink. Some people have like a trash can that's in like some sliding out cabinet thing.
Sometimes I stand in the corner and look like a trash can.
I wasn't going to say that, Matthew. I'm glad that you are able to own it though. What my parents did was they basically in the butcher block top of their kitchen island, they cut a hole, like a circle in the butcher block, and beneath it was
cabinet. Like at the doctor's office.
That's right.
Yeah.
And beneath it was a cabinet where they kept a trash can.
Yeah. I love that approach.
It was pretty great. Well, here's the only thing that was weird. They wouldn't let me actually, and they wouldn't
they wouldn't
themselves
let you climb
either.
Into it head first.
No, they wouldn't let you chop anything directly on the butcher block. What is the point of having butcher block if you won't cut directly on it? So I feel like the point of that kind of trash setup is so that you could sweep whatever you're working on into the trash.
I want this. I want this so bad. I'm never going to get it, but maybe someday like at an Airbnb or something.
But the trash of my youth was like one size fits all, whereas trash now is like compost, recycling, and garbage.
The trash of my youth is a great name for a memoir. And you are a noted memoirist and should get working on this immediately.
Okay. Wait a minute. I just want to... Oh, hold on. I've got some other things I want to say. I love listener Colton's question.
Me too.
Are there appliances you hide so well that you forget to ever use them?
I mean,
like by hide, does he mean just like put in a cabinet?
I think he means like a treasure hunt, like a scavenger
hunt. Okay.
Like have you ever like hidden them all over your house and then made like a family circus type of map?
That sounds like so much fun.
Like
I don't know why.
Little Billy following a dotted line from the panini maker to the toaster oven.
How do you feel about microwaves installed over the oven?
Oh, I'm glad you reminded me about that. I like it. That's what I grew up with on Southwest 46th Street in Portland. Now our microwave is on the counter and is like always kind of in the way of the dishes or like drying dishes. And like there's no better place to put it. We've mentioned before, like we have like a basically non-functional vent fan that isn't doing anything up there. So like put a microwave up there.
Yeah, I have neither a microwave over the stove, nor do I have an exhaust fan. I mean, I do think it's nice when everything has a place and that place is not directly on the countertop.
Yeah. You know?
So like, I totally get what you're saying about the microwave. As it happens, most of my stuff, including my microwave, is like below the counter, but on open shelving. And right. I don't love that either because everything gets dusty all the time and it's stupid and I hate it.
Yeah. But that's kind of life.
But it's super accessible and my life would be a lot less dusty if I didn't have a dog, and I'm not willing to do that.
Yeah. You know what I've got going on over here that you don't know about yet, but has made this episode that much more enjoyable for me.
Are you not wearing pants?
I'm not wearing pants, and I got a Comfy Life like gel pad for my feet.
Oh,
here in the podcast.
Mat.
An anti-fatigue mat. Yeah.
It's
so nice. I can't believe I waited this long.
Can you hide any appliances under it?
I mean, like flat appliances, like flat D.
The flat D. Okay, wait. One other thing. I feel fine about hotels hiding their refrigerators.
Yeah, go for it. As long as I can find it.
Sure. Yeah. You know what I don't like? I don't like it when the fridge locks, when there's like a lock on that one.
If I encountered a lock, are you sure you're not thinking of the safe?
No, sometimes it's like a
I know what you mean. Like, yeah,
cabinet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That seems unnecessary.
I don't really understand that.
Maybe.
I mean, I guess maybe if you were a parent and you wanted to lock your teenager out of it.
Yeah, because like teenagers love mini bars. They will rack up a bill. Teens always racking up a bill. So, Molly, what you snacking?
Hey, what you snacking? You gotta tell me what you snacking. Or I'll release the kraken. So what you snacking?
What you snacking? I do want to say as a disclaimer that I don't like the fact that what I'm about to talk about is described by its creator as healthy.
Okay.
I don't like talking about food that way. But what I've been snacking is a particular zucchini muffin that I've been making for years now. I think since 2019, maybe, when the recipe was published. It was published on the Cup of Joe blog. The recipe originally was created by Sarah Forte of the site Sprouted Kitchen.
Okay.
At this time of year, or actually the time of year when we're recording this, so it's early September right now. You're hearing this in October. But it is so great to have a recipe to put all your extra zucchini into.
I was just going to say, are you dealing with a zucchini glut?
Well, we've been getting like 2 zucchini a week from our CSA.
Okay, so you don't have zucchini growing in your own garden.
I don't.
Okay. No, that wasn't a criticism.
No, I'm a little sad.
Do you ever hide the
zucchini? To be honest, I can't believe you brought up this thing I'm so sensitive about. Do I ever hide this?
I thought that was just going to go by.
No. So here's the thing. This recipe uses 1 cup of grated zucchini. I love when I am like sort of prepping all my veggies when I bring my CSA box home. Sometimes I'm just like, I can't deal with another cucumber and another zucchini and I will just... grate it right then and there, divide it up into 1 cup portions.
I mean, they do look very similar.
Put each one in a baggie, put them all in a bigger baggie together and label them so that whenever I want to make this recipe, which is so delicious, it has almond flour in it.
Oh, interesting.
Chocolate chips, a little bit of cinnamon, olive oil. It's really good.
You're making this sound really good. Like I don't think of myself as a person who would like actively seek out a zucchini muffin, although I would certainly eat one if it was on hand. But now I feel like I want to ask, I could make it myself, but Watzel is generally the muffin maker. And so like, if I asked for this, she would make it, but would also make fun of me for requesting it.
Hmm. Okay. Well, you know, whatever you two are into.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's right. That's our basic dynamic.
Anyway. So yeah, that's the zucchini muffin recipe from Sarah Forte, as published on Cup of Joe. We'll link to it in the show notes, but yeah, it was published in like September of 2019. Good stuff.
I am snacking as well. And in addition to peanut M&Ms and Cheez-Its, which apparently everyone knows I'm into, you know, when I go to the store, I will often come home with a new product because I can't resist. This one is the Nature Valley Savory Nut Crunch Bars, and they are savory granola bars, which is kind of a good idea, I think. I was not sure if they were going to be good, but there are three flavors, and the only one I've tried is barbecue. I know one of the other ones is everything bagel, and I don't remember the third one, but it's like a small savory granola bar that's based on peanuts. So it's got like peanuts and some other nuts and seeds in it. It's not sweet. I was like concerned that it was going to be sort of like a sweet and savory kind of thing, which I'm not really into. It's not sweet. It's really salty in a good way. And I really enjoyed it. It's like, if you've ever had like the barbecue flavored almonds, like just roasted almonds. I like those too. And it's kind of like that.
Okay.
And when I looked this up online to like make sure I had the name right, it looks like these are really polarizing. Like some people hate them. So if you think you might like a barbecue flavored nut bar, I would say give it a try. And if you hate it, don't blame me.
All right. Matthew, you've got a now but wow for us this week that makes me wish I had the ability to play video games, the actual like device.
Did the Switch end up at your co-parents' house?
It has wound up at my co-parents' house. Yep.
So this now but wow is called Venba. It's a game created by Visai Games in Toronto. It is a beautiful game about an Indian Canadian family, and it's billed as like, you know, when you sell a video game, you sort of have to like say what category of game it is. And so it's kind of billed as a cooking simulator, which it is, but it's a lot more than that. It is a game that like follows like a family's life over the course of decades. And it deals with like real, like tough topics, like, you know, raising a child as immigrant parents and like, you know, these Indian parents seeing their kid grow up as like a Canadian kid and having to deal with that. It deals with anti-Asian hate and discrimination. And it's also just full of moments of everyday joy. It has a fantastic soundtrack. It's got beautifully colorful cartoon art. And it's a
sounds like a great movie.
It could absolutely be a movie. It's a short game. You can finish it in an hour probably. And it's a game, I think, like if you have a platform that can play this, I think every one of our listeners will enjoy this. I feel like if you don't get hungry and also cry during this game, probably you're a robot. It sort of reminded me a little bit, like in a good way, of the intro to the movie Up, in that, like, you know, they are jerking your tears, but you're going to like it.
And what is it called again?
It's called Venba, V-E-N-B-A, and it's available for Switch, Windows, PS5, and Xbox.
Cool. Okay. All right. Well, our producer is Abby Circatella.
Molly's got a newsletter called I've Got a Feeling, and it's available at mollyweisenberg.substack.com. It's excellent. You should go sign up.
Matthew's got a band. Matthew actually plays with multiple different projects.
That's true.
But Matthew has a band called Early to the Airport.
Yeah, Early to the Airport. We are working on some new songs that I'm pretty excited about. Can't listen to them yet, but we'll have to make them first, and then you can listen to them. I also have a band called Twilight Diners that's at twilightdiners.bandcamp.com. That's me and my friend Meredith, and we have one cover song out, and we're working on some originals.
Awesome. All right. Well, you can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
And you can ask other Spilled Milk listeners where they hide their appliances at everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com.
I cannot wait to read the replies. Thank you again, listener Colton. Thank you, listener Seaside Houses or Seaside Tables or Seaside Horses for suggesting today's episode.
My seaside horse ran away with my seaside table. That was it. Yeah, that was the closing joke.
I'm disappointed.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton, the disappointer. Okay, so I'm so glad you asked because this is so interesting and not at all boring.
Great.
I'm ready. I think I'm ready to fight a bear.